Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to 97.9 The Hill, the best radio station in North Carolina. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius. I'm Carl Nordgren. Folks, this is the show to remind you, I'm going to remind you every week, that you won't find a definition of creativity here. Instead, you'll hear me and often guests, we have a guest today, talk about just how important it is, and it's so important, it shouldn't be defined. So we give you lots of perspectives, lots of different directions on what it means to be creative so that you can craft your own situationally intelligent, dynamic understanding. And again, as I said, one of the best ways to get those multiple perspectives is to bring in very interesting guests. And we've got a great one today. His name is Mike Biddle. I asked my guests to give me a short introduction because I want to hear, you know, I want them to hear their voices. And so here's Mike's short introduction. He's a self-described geek with ADD. I love this next one. His career has taken him from the stockroom to the boardroom twice. And he likes to say, I don't ask how or why, I ask why not. Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. You're
sharing your good stuff with the folks.
Oh, pleasure.
Want to add anything more about your background before we get started?
No, I think that sums it up. I thought I was going to be an engineer, went to an engineering school, and promptly decided I needed to actually do things and make things.
Okay.
So I dropped out and ended up working for some early startups in very low-level positions and became a night school prodigy all the way through my MBA.
Okay.
So it was all a parallel learning process and all sorts of different verticals. So I did aerospace, computers, media and entertainment, and pretty much touched every functional area of the business.
Well, I have that sense. Mike and I have only known each other for a short period of time, but the times that we've spent together, I'm always sitting back thinking, and you got into that as well. and you're a builder. I mean, I can tell that.
Yes.
A builder. You like to build stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You like to build stuff.
A little mad science project going at home now and a sort of interesting sound reinforcement for acoustic stringed instruments. We'll see how that goes.
Well, you gave me your CD. You want to talk for just a second and then we'll dig in about your CD?
That's another classic, creativity is just – for me, creativity is applied curiosity, right? So I've always liked playing music and I was taking some voice lessons just because I like to do that. And the teacher said, you should play at some open mics and you should write originals because that, brings more of your performance skills out. And before I know it, I was out playing open mics and around Manhattan.
Cool.
And then getting a few gigs here and there. And people say, hey, you have a CD?
You know, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. I've been told.
Not sure because then the twins were born and that was the end of the music career.
Well, I'm looking forward to listening to your CD. Mike and I have realized that we share a lot of the same perspectives on building and creating and entrepreneurship. We use different language. I appreciate that when I asked him to send me a couple of prompting questions for him, he's using some of my language because he's going to talk to us now, folks, about his advice about how to develop and use your creative genius when you're at work making your individual contribution. Mm-hmm.
I think – and this is where the curiosity is so important. I came up during the period of continuous improvement programs and was very active in that. And one of the things that was very helpful to businesses trying to be more effective and is very helpful for individuals being more effective was understanding essentially your own personal supply chain in the business, right? People are going to supply me things that I am going to work on, and then I'm delivering a work product to somebody upstream.
Right.
And the more I understand their needs on both sides and the more they understand mine, the easier it is. You have a broader palette of things going on in your mind, the easier it is to find creative ways to be more effective and move on.
Right. Yeah, I've done very little of, you know, I haven't done that whole timeline or that whole line, that whole supply line like you're just imagining it. I have talked to folks about the handoff, mm-hmm. right, to find a creative way mm-hmm. to make that handoff better mm-hmm. for the person that you're – my analogy would be, you know, a quarterback knows that they want to lead the wide receiver so they never have to break stride, right? So can you deliver a piece of work to somebody so they don't have to break stride?
Right, right. And the other one of the other tools is that it comes up a lot is the five whys. You know, you ask why do we do it this way? Well, because of this. Well, why? And that's my nature of being more like when I talked about being a geek, I'm more interested in why things break than how to build new things. So I'm always asking, well, why is that? If you've ever been into a situation at your office where you had a suggestion and then they come back and they say, well, we tried that. It didn't work. Well, my question is, okay, why didn't it work?
Right.
And invariably you get a blank stare.
Right.
Well, if you don't know why it didn't work, you didn't really try something. You right. threw something at the wall.
Right.
If you understand why it didn't work, you might find out it's not the idea, it was the implementation.
Right.
And you might be able to find a way to actually, you know, your vision might have been right. You might have had a good idea of, hey, this would be better if you just stumbled in the implementation.
Right. And implementation. Man,
that's it.
That's it.
I've coached startups a lot, and they'll say, "Well, it's this great idea. Idea is not worth anything.
Yeah.
You got to reduce it to practice.
Right.
You've got to make a real product. So implementation is key."
So we're going to move to the next one, but let me just ask you: any other advice for someone who's trying to bring their creativity as an individual to bear on their job?
Know yourself,
yeah.
Because one of the barriers to that curiosity is fear. It's fear of failure, fear of judgment. So you have to ask yourself, and I've talked to a lot of people, well, I'm not really that creative. I'm not that curious. We all started out curious. Where were you trained not to do that?
Right,
and how can you train yourself to be curious again and to not worry about making a mistake? That's where we learn. That's how we evolve. So that's I think the most important. Really be in tune with yourself and say, why am I not pursuing this? Am I afraid of what's going to happen? And you can use that curiosity to bolster your own story. You don't have to come out with the suggestion right away and say, hey, this is a good idea. All right, let me be curious. Let me look at how I might implement that. Let me look at what the barriers might be. And then I have a more complete implementation when I present it.
Very nice. Very nice. Very, very nice. And so Mike has got a lot more to share with us folks. And when he comes back from the break, he's going to talk about how do you bring your creativity to bear as a leader of an organization. I'm really looking forward to hearing that. Come on back.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius. I'm Carl Nordgren. We're here today with Mike Biddle. Mike is an individual who has got, you know, Steve Jobs. You know, I won't define creativity. Steve Jobs did. He said creativity is connecting the dots. So make sure you have a lot of dots. I'm sitting across the table from somebody who's just been collecting so many dots, and he's so very, very creative. Mike was talking about how his advice about how do you bring your creative genius as an individual into work. I'm looking forward to hearing you talk about how that serves leaders in an organization.
Absolutely. And one of the things that you have to remember as a leader and even more so as a manager with, you know, with the keys to the bank, you have to understand that what you do and how you act has tremendous, tremendous impact. And if you want to foster an environment where people are creative, I spoke earlier about the fear factor. If you shoot the messenger, or if you know your body language says, "Oh, we didn't make the quarter," that's the message that comes across. Okay. So it's really important to foster the creativity. It's not necessarily cost effective in the beginning, or it doesn't appear to be, because the benefits are longer term and longer lasting. So you
excuse
really,
me, repeat that. They're not only really long term, they're also longer lasting.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. Sometimes it's allowing people to have the chance to just free think. It means supporting your people to go to trade shows and be a part and supporting them in extracurricular professional activities, because it's that sort of collaboration and different ideas coming from different people that then feed the creativity pool in your own organization.
Right.
And that's, you know, I can't say enough how important it is to not shut things down. I think we were talking about a story where had gone through a process of improvement in the organization, and we're coming to the end of quarter and shipping product, and all of a sudden a bunch of problems went out in the field, and we didn't know why. And turned out, when I talked to the frontline troops, the COO had come down, "Oh, we have to make the quarter. We need to make our numbers."
Oh, okay.
He totally contradicted the message we had been sending for months.
Which was a quality message.
It's a quality message, and it was improvement. And then, to his credit, he actually got up there and said, "Oops, my mistake."
Oh, he did acknowledge it.
He did acknowledge it. So, because it was really important to set the tone. So we all learned from that.
So that's a manager who's also a leader.
Yes,
when
absolutely.
You can acknowledge your mistakes, I find that as a leadership quality.
Yeah, it's rare.
It's rare. There's a lot of leaders.
As many as anybody out there will probably go, "Oh, yeah, my boss, oof."
Well, fold in the concept of servant leadership into your thoughts about leaders needing to be creative and open.
Yeah, I always looked at leadership as in the organization as more of a buffer.
Okay.
Right. So I want to be able to absorb all the input from my frontline people and all the knowledge and wisdom and their concerns, and I want to be able to package that so that my management, the leadership of the company, or my executive team, depending on what level I'm at,
right,
can take positive action, can use that positively. By the same token, as this previous example, I want to buffer them from the pressures of the executive staff.
Right.
The frontline folks have plenty to do. They don't need to worry about end of quarter numbers and whether the investors are happy. They need to worry about that the customers are happy and
right.
that they can get along and work well with each other. So it's really more of I hate the buzzword, but the emotional intelligence mm-hmm. of really being in tune with your troops and just being that buffer, that conduit for the communications up and down the food chain.
I bet we have a similar quality that I love all the ideas behind emotional intelligence, but when people just use that label
and don't dig
into what it – because it's such important stuff, right? You're doing everyone a disservice to just simply say, "Well, you need emotional intelligence."
As humans, we have a fundamental failing of taking complex items, oversimplifying them, and then botching the implementation from there.
Yeah. But Einstein said, let's go for simplicity, but work your way through to that simplicity,
yes.
right? Work
yes,
your way through
exactly.
all the complexity to that simplicity.
Right. Yeah.
Well, the concept of servant leadership has always been a lot to me. I don't think I invented this. I think I've come across this someplace about pragmatic altruism.
Mm, yes.
When you do something that you really, really want to do, mm-hmm. it makes you feel so good.
It does.
But it has these tremendous, tremendous impacts. And,
absolutely.
And that's my prime example of that is servant leadership. It makes me feel so good to serve an organization. And then I see what happens.
Yes.
The very best people love to be served.
and that's back to my point. If you're true to yourself, both as a contributor and a leader, that comes through.
Right.
Right? People have bull detectors that are excellent, and so they catch it. I've told people that are doing mergers and acquisitions, if you stand up in front of the company after the merger and merger process, you know, as the new owners, as the new investors, and say, "We love what you're doing. Nothing will change." Blah blah blah. It's not true, and they know it's your troops know it's not true. Right. So,
and that's the primacy effect, right? From the very beginning, you're not telling
anyone. Exactly. So now everybody's like looking for the exits.
Right, right, right. Well, I had a company that was growing. It was on Inc. magazine's list of fastest growing companies 2 years in a row. And all of a sudden, a huge client just kicked us out the door. And the partners and I sat down to determine what kind of cut we had to make. Mm-hmm. And I was that person who said, "I'm sorry, guys, we got to cut strongly because we can't come back and cut a second time."
Right.
After the first cut, we can stand up there and tell people, mm-hmm. "This is our plan. We've done this once, and we're going to do it." But if we then come back up 3 months later and say, "Sorry, we have to cut again,"
absolutely,
all credibility is lost, and that's similar to what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, folks, we've got to have some more great stuff from Mike when you come back for the third segment, and please do.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. This is Carl Nordgren. I'm here with Mike Biddle. He's been sharing his wonderful wisdoms that he's gained from working in many different environments, often around product development, product cultivation, getting the product out into the field, but also a good bit of experience as an entrepreneur. And so we're going to conclude today with Mike talking about what happens when you have an idea and you want to do something with it as an entrepreneur.
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of people have an idea, whether within a company or outside, and sometimes they're prompted by other people. "Oh, we should do something like this. Oh, you know, this is the greatest tomato sauce ever. We should sell this." There's a difference between the idea and do you have a product? And I've learned some of that the hard way, and then the product to the business.
Oh, good.
Right. So the from idea to product, it's not just, is this, you know, something that people want, but can you actually create it, make it profitably? And that's the hard part, is understanding all of the nuances and getting the team together and people together to help you to determine what are the things you need to actually make this a repeatable product.
Okay.
Now, that may be as far as you need to go. You may be able to sell that product to an existing enterprise.
Right.
Because the real hard part is, I have this great app that I'm going to sell to somebody. How are you going to make that into a real business?
Good.
Because that takes a lot of time. So you have to understand how much runway you have before, and because you have to show something before you're going to get the outside investors you will need to scale the business.
Right.
So having a sense of really the some actual market feedback from people. You need to be out there and iterate with that product. And you have to have in the back of your mind, what do you need financially, A, to survive and keep running so that you can go through that process over and over again. And that was the hard part for me. I came to that with one of my startups was, I'm looking at the ramp of how quickly we're onboarding customers and how the revenue is coming in and the projection to I run out of runway at this point and I need to be making this much money to support the family.
Right.
The graphs do not intersect at the right point.
Okay.
So having that in mind will keep you focused on the right issues from the business perspective and also keep you from getting yourself in trouble.
So I heard you reference this. Let me ask you to double back to it. When you're out there working, iterating with the product, the potential customer, of course, has a role in that. How do you bring those potential customers into the?
Well, you have to have somebody. You have to. A lot of times, you you are familiar, you have the domain expertise, so you can go out to people that you already know in the business
right.
and say, hey, listen, I've got this idea. Good. Will you help me figure that out? People are always eager to help, always eager to try out new stuff. So,
isn't that true?
Yes.
That's one of the things I would tell young entrepreneurs. Don't be shy about asking for
yes.
help, because people, especially when you're a young entrepreneur,
yes.
people want to give that help.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they're excited. They love to be a part of a startup opportunity. Starts to build your buzz in the marketplace. If
mm-hmm.
people are exploring this and they talk to their friends and say, hey, I'm trying out this new thing. It's really cool. That'll help you get some momentum and get you more people to try.
Right.
And then very early on, you need to see if people will pay for it.
Right.
You have to start saying, all right, I can't do this freemium thing forever. I have to see, is there real value there? So I have to understand what my price point needs to be. Pricing is the hardest part of business. You have to figure out what my price point needs to be.
Never wanted to be the person who has to determine what we should price.
Absolutely. And you're going to have to do that. And it, you know, you might be wrong. You might have to try it. But you want to do it from a point of intelligence that said, this is what I need to run the business.
Right.
I need, if I think I can sell this many, I need to charge this much.
Right.
Does that work? You know, hey, everybody likes it.
Right.
They like it because it's free. I get all these. I like to play a game on my phone, but I don't need it.
Yeah.
So why would I pay for it?
In the entrepreneurship world, we hear all the time the phrase, "Well, now it's time to find out if the dog will eat the dog food."
Right.
But I always wanted to say, "No, it's time to find out if the dog eats the dog food. Will the owner pay for that dog food?"
That's the absolutely, absolutely. That is the hard one. And you know, depending on where your market is, if you're dealing with small businesses, medium-sized businesses, big companies, the dynamics of that decision are very different. You know, the small business may actually need it but doesn't have the cash flow to
right.
buy it.
Right.
The big company may not even realize they need it. They could
right.
buy it. They waste their money on all sorts of new tools, but that's a harder sell. If you can crack it, that's great. We were trying to get a product out to market, and one of the major networks was interested in it, and my sales guy was all excited, and I said, and he mentioned the customer mentioned, oh, and I noticed that Verizon is starting to do something like this, and I said, you gotta go with Verizon, and my salesman was like, I said, look, this is a big company, right? They pay net 90 at best. They want everything for free because they think they get leverage
right.
by you selling to them as a major corporation.
They're the 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah, yeah. I need real customers. I need smaller, mid-sized businesses
nice
that will actually pay their bills.
Nice insight.
So,
well, we've got just a half a minute left, folks. And so, Mike, is there any last little gem that you want to – Do you have a personal creativity habit that gets you into the place that you want to be, or you were getting ready to form a thought? I'll be quiet.
Yeah, I think trust your gut.
Okay.
Try things. I think that's the thing. Try things.
Yep.
If it breaks, you'll learn something. If it doesn't work, you've learned something, but try it.
I love that you said that earlier, right, that failure is just simply learning.
Absolutely.
And the more you fail – The faster you learn.
Yep.
Who is
Absolutely.
The old
well, Edison is one of the big examples of how many light bulbs he had to make
right.
to get a real light bulb.
Right. And then what was the name of the IBM guy that really made IBM into what it was in the 50s last?
Oh, Watson.
Watson.
I think,
He said, you want to learn more? Double your error rate.
Yes.
Yes. Well, folks, thanks for listening. And I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. And this is Exploring Your Creative Genius. We'll be back next week.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.